Tonight, let me just speak to you on what I call another type of fire. Another type of fire. So throughout the whole of the month, we have looked at fire as a symbol of revival, that we wanted God to set our hearts on fire. But there's also another type of fire that is not for revival, but is also for trials and discipline and hardship and suffering. See, when I was growing up, so I'm talking on the subject, the furnace of suffering. The furnace of suffering. The furnace of suffering. So I have been looking the furnace of suffering. Okay. Now, we are all socialized differently. How many of you know that? How you were brought up. See, the way I react to things and the way I behave towards women and the way I behave towards the elderly and the way I behave towards junior people, young people, and the way I act around, the way I manage money, the way I behave, my values and everything is called my socialization. Okay? And mine may be different from yours. Because whoever raised me is different from who raised you. The circumstances of your upbringing is different from mine. You see? So I grew up in Adabraka. I was raised by a Methodist priest and a former teacher, an old Ekapin man who had too many laws. My father's laws were so many that in attempting to obey one, you break the other. Like Ghana's constitution, you know. And so I was raised by a very disciplined father, a father that had a lot of disciplines. And then my mother too, Wesley Girls High School graduate, who when we're talking to my mother, for instance, and my mother is asking you for direction. Kofi, where do they sell the bread? And they say, Mama, it's here. And then my mother will hit your hand. That when you are talking to an elderly person, you don't have to point. You don't have to raise your hand. So you put your hand in your back and say, Mama, it's here, it's here. And then she say, how can you direct me like that? You know, those kinds. So my socialization is different. Okay. Yours may also be very, very different. And that's why we all behave differently. Now, outside socialization is also what I call spiritualization or spiritual formation. Spiritual formation. How you have been nurtured and been groomed spiritually. Some of you have sat under me for 15 years, some for 20 years. Your spiritual formation has been, the architect of your spiritual formation has been me. Okay? Some of you. But some of you, before you came here, others have also been involved in laying the foundation of your spiritual formation. So I have either successfully restructured the architectural designs of your spiritual formation, or I have failed based on the way you respond to what I teach and what I preach. Okay, so let me tell you about the way I was spiritualized. Growing, when I was a young Christian, I got born again, We had a way in which we looked at problems and we looked at trials and we looked at hardship. We really didn't look at hardship as an attack. In fact, 90% of our thinking when it comes to how we reacted to hardship was not that we were under an attack, but that our faith was being tried. Okay? So we had a lot of sermons like the trials of your faith. And then we had sermons like, why should a Christian suffer? And then we had sermons like long suffering and all those things. So it made us handle hardship better. It made us respond to hardship better. That's this generation. For most of you in this generation, your spiritualization taught you that every problem in your life is an attack. It's an attack. And you really give Satan a lot of attention in your prayers. Okay? You really give Satan a lot of attention in your prayers. If you want to pray about a problem for 1 hour, 50 minutes of that 1 hour will be focused on the witches that are attacking you, the demons, the curses. You know, I preach about that, I believe it. Okay. The curses, you revoke them, you will do this and do that. And then you are not likely to end up praying a prayer like, Lord, strengthen me to go through the fire. Let this situation draw me closer to you. You are not likely to pray a prayer like that. You are not likely to view, okay? You're not likely to view a hard situation as God intentionally taking you through something in order for his will and purpose to be done in your life. You're not likely. This generation, we are, most people in this generation, we don't look at hardship that way. And that is why our crisis, spiritual crisis survival rate is very low. When we were growing up, if a sister got married and she doesn't get pregnant, the attention is not like, oh, some witches and wizards. The attention is like Sarah had to wait for this number of years because God was preparing her womb for Isaac. And then Rebecca had to wait for this number of years because God was preparing her womb for this. You get it? God was preparing a womb for Jacob and Esau. Okay? And then we say Rachel has to wait for all those years, even though Leah had children. But when Rachel's child came, Joseph, you see, and we will look at it. And the sister who has been waiting for God for 10 years, for 15 years, it's not crying, it's not, but it's rejoicing with the Lord and saying that, Father, I know there's a prophetic baby coming. So 90% of our reaction to problems were more or less like God is up to something. And 10% was Satan is working against me. Now, but you see, we had a spirit of discernment. And so in the spirit of discernment, we can easily tell that this is satanic attack and this is God leading us through a certain path. Now, it is not your fault because, especially within the charismatic fraternity, our spiritual formation is very problematic. You see, when you go to the Catholic Church and you are born into the Catholic Church, the doctrine of the Catholic Church is structured from Sunday school or the Methodist Church or the, before you can do what we call confirmation, you would have gone through a series of biblical and confirmation at the age of 13, 14, or 12. 12, 13, 14, was a very big ceremony for parents. Serious big ceremony. So by the time you get to that, your early teens, and you go through that spiritual, that confirmation, there is a certain knowledge of the Bible that is laid in your heart forever. Most scriptures that really registered in my spirit as a young boy were the scriptures I was compelled to memorize in the Methodist school. You get it? They have their songs, they have their doctrine, they have their style of doing things, and everybody will go through it. But the charismatics, we don't do. You know why you don't do? You know why we don't do? You know why we don't do? Because we focus on quantitative growth than qualitative growth. See, some of you will be here for some time, and then you see another church will come here, and then the church suddenly, they have 2,000, 3,000 people. And then you'll be saying, oh, so why is our church not growing? But you see, you're the person that is asking that question. You should look at yourself in the mirror, and you see that since you came to this church, Charlie, you used to smoke, you are stopped. You used to chase women, you are stopped. You used to beat your wife, you are stopped. You used to be a prostitute, you are stopped. And then you see that, no, the growth is in us. So there are two ways in which churches grow. You are either growing big or you are growing up. So most churches grow big, but they don't grow up. So when you are within that church, every sin you will find outside the church, you will find some in the church. Pastors will be sleeping with the girls in the church. And a friend of mine told me about a situation. I said, that pastor, I respect him, so I had to believe what he was saying. That anybody who has said that, I would have a senior pastor of the church, has a wife, and has a girlfriend, and he has given birth with a girlfriend, and the whole church knows. And sometimes after church, the pastor's wife and the girlfriend will fight. Not like fighting like, oh, you are, like whole wrestling. And the church is divided among. So I'm asking, well, why do people still go to that church? And there are a lot, oh. Because you see, the way the spiritual formation of the church has been orchestrated in that church, cheating and giving birth and burning whatever, it's not a problem. Like, how is a problem for me when I see my pastoral associates and Bible school students walking in pairs after church? Sometimes I observe them. I go home and I'll come to pass. And you see pastoral associate A with some sister, Bible student A, B with some sister, and I'm worried that, hey! When Jesus sent the disciples 2 by 2, they were male and male. They were going for evangelism. But this male and female, where are they going? What an 1138 behavior. And it becomes a worry for me. You see, the sermons I preach and how I preach it, I am intentional about it. I am intentional about the way I structure my sermons and the way I do the series that I do. I'm intentional. I know that it is not a very popular type of sermons that I preach here. It's not a sermons that will tell you that tomorrow by this time God will do this. It's not those kind of sermons, but I'm intentional. I'm intentional because I want to. I'm the architect of your spiritual formation. Do you understand? I'm the architect of your spiritual formation. I have to be able. You can ask the Bible students who have even come to Bible school that since they have been to Bible school, their spiritual understanding of God and the works of God have massively been improved. Seriously been improved. Okay? Because of the way I teach it, how I teach it. So Paul said that he has laid the foundation as a master builder. So the Christian life is like you are building a house. Somebody has to lay the foundation. So in this church, I'm the master builder. I am laying the foundation. All these pastors must build on the foundation that I lay. So for instance, if we see any of these pastors, they are preaching. And they are preaching, they don't sound like me. Then you know. Because if we are building a golden house, and you start building with wood, then there's a problem. If any of my pastors here want to sound like another pastor, preach like another pastor, if I come to your house and you are playing another pastor's sermon, and it's not my sermon, I will mark you down. Did you understand? It's not because. No, you see. So I am your father. I want to have healthy children. And so you have to eat a certain kind of food. And I'm providing the food. When I met mommy, when I met mommy, she didn't like gobe. She couldn't eat gari. I said, what a woman. Do you know her favorite food? Malt and biscuit. And at that time, for me to buy one malt, like every month I was drinking one malt. I said to myself, this girl, I have to rewire her. The first time I cooked for her, do you know what the food I cooked for her? Cassava and stew. Banchiam Pesier. She was coming to visit me. I was going to credit food stamp. When I go where I used to credit food stamp, the woman didn't have anything except cassava. And I couldn't prepare fufu. So I got the cassava. I did my egg stew. I'm an expert in egg stew. And then in jollof. Oh, yes. Recently, Nana was telling me that, Daddy, during the COVID, you used to cook jollof for us. You're not cooking it again. I said, did you like it? Oh, the way she responded, I even felt very bad. Did you like it? Say yes, it was pepperish. I thought I was going to say it was nice or something. Only said it was pepperish. But I'm a very good jollof cooker. I can really prepare jollof, you know. But that time I did the egg stew, which was, I'm a very good expert as egg stew. And then I prepared the cassava. And then my fiancé came to visit me. You see, Sister Spirit came. Then I served her the cassava and the dish thing. And I had to make sure I pretended as if there was yam, but I chose cassava because cassava is healthier, stronger, nicer, better. Oh, and she believed me and ate it. So the next day I went to visit her. And mommy had a very wild sister. Mommy comes after her. She speaks her mind. Up to now, she's an old lady, but she still speaks her mind. Then I got to their house. The first thing she asked me, so you, hey, me the pastor, you, what did you give my sister to eat yesterday? I said, oh, it was cassava. He said, go and see how she had been vomiting. Then when I went, this is Olivia. Hey! So you see, her mother has fed her with a certain type of food over a period of time. It means the diet was changed by Yofi. She nearly died. That's how you people, some of you, I'm feeding you with a certain type of food. And then you go and mix it with another food. Another food somewhere. You go and hear some pastor who is preaching certain things that are not in the Bible, but it is good to your ears. It is good to your ears. Like I'm going to share with you that it is not every problem God wants to solve. But there were pastors that will you meet tomorrow and will tell you that your mother and your mother's mother and your this, and then they tell you mystical things that you cannot verify. Because you see, when you have a problem, you want a solution. And the easiest solution is the one that takes the responsibility from you and puts it on someone. And even though you cannot verify it, but once it's on someone, you believe it. And then the person who told you the solution now says, I have assumed the responsibility of solving the problem for you. And then that is where. But that is where how occultism begins. That's how occultism begins. That's how human worship begins. When I start telling you things, when you come to me and I take you from where you will understand to where you don't understand, can tell you things, and now I tell you that because of where I've taken you and you don't understand, now I've taken over. All you have to do is that, trust me that I'm praying for you. I am fasting for you. and then sow this amount of money. Give me this. Bring salt. Bring pepper. Bring this. If like you sit down quietly and see the things that you were asked to bring. Bring pepper, you need two pepper. The next day, say bring tomatoes. Then virtually, you are provided everything for palm nut soup. Okay, so have I laid the foundation of the sermon? So your spiritual formation is very crucial. How you react to problems, how you deal with different situations is traceable to your spiritual formation. And I'm saying that, you see, when you become a Christian, and there is no intentional way of someone trying to groom you and grow you. Look at how I took the first 6 months of this year just to talk about Jesus says, I am the vine. And I'm the true vine. And taught you how to remain in him. And I'm going to continue from this Sunday. We are going back to the true vine. And I'm going to teach you on how to bear fruit. So I'm already teaching you the fruit. Look at how, only the fruit of spirit. Look at how many weeks we spent on love, agape. I didn't feel agape, but I feel I want to move on. So the whole fruit of the spirit, I only talked about agape. But look at the explanation I gave with the agape. Look at the time I took with the drawings, with everything, just to let you, I'm intentional. I want you to walk in agape love. I want you to love God, love yourself, and love your neighbor. Okay? And love your neighbor. So I taught you those things, and I was intentional about it. When you come to church like this, you are able to make notes. You are able to write. And I'm intentional. I'm very, very intentional because I am laying the foundation. I'm building your spiritual architecture. I am framing you, making you strong, causing you to love the Lord and to serve him. And that is the ultimate thing that you have to become. You have to become a deep lover of Christ and a major servant of him, and him alone. And him alone should be the focus of your Christian life. He should be the focus of your Christian life. Church is Christ. Without him, there is no church. Okay, so the finance of suffering means something. It means that did you ever come to meet the oven that our mothers used to bake bread in? Frono. How do you say that in Ewe? Aboloko. Aboloko. Like abolo and po. So do you call bread abolo in French? In Ewe? Aboloko. Okay. I like. You know the Ewe language is, when you take Chi, the local language, Chi and Gan, the nearest one I can speak is the Ewe one. Efuan. Esrofo. Deviofo. Okay, so aboloko, at least I've known that one. How do you say it in Ghana? Fono. So this oven that you used to bake bread in is called finance. Okay, so and the same thing that they used to you put gold inside and they melt the gold is called finance. So when I talk about the furnace of suffering, I'm talking about the fire that you go through and you suffer. And you know sometimes God takes us through it. Look at this. Look at the introductory scriptures. Can we go to the next slide? Look at the introductory scripture. Isaiah 48 verse 10 from the New Living Translation. I have refined you, but not as silver is refined. Rather, I have refined you in the furnace of suffering. I refined you in the furnace of suffering. Am I preaching the word? Am I preaching the word? Is it in the Bible? So you see, so most of you are young people here, and you really look after me. A lot of you who really look after me, see, daddy, this is our daddy, papa, this is our papa. And you know what? Because you see me as a very refined man of God. Okay? Very refined man of God. I don't bring you troubles. You don't see me on Facebook. The pastor has gone to do this, and your pastor has gone to give false prophecy, and your pastor has gone to fornicate with somebody, commit adultery here. I don't bring you scandals. Okay? So you are very proud of me. So you show, oh, this is my pastor, oh, this is my distance. Some of you can even get job telling people that Bishop Titiofe is my pastor. He can open doors for you. But you know how I got here? I've already told you my story. How I grew up, how I suffered. I've been through the furnace of suffering. I shared my story of how mommy and I, we came here. We were homeless, squatters. I've been through the furnace of suffering. And God chose suffering to refine me. To refine me. He chose suffering. If suffering cannot make you fine, then your ugliness is a serious one. No, do you know you can be so ugly that the best makeup case will not even fit you? Oh yeah, some people get uglier using makeups. You can be very ugly that even monkeys will laugh at you. Yeah. And I'm saying that if so, let's do the next scripture. Let me show you. Job 23 verse 10. But he knows the way that I take. When he has tested me, I will come forth as gold. So Job is saying that me, I'm gold. Oh, my Christian life, my relationship with God is at the golden level. I am a golden Christian. Golden believer, when I am tested, I won't burn. I will come out forth as gold. Ha! And when a man like this is speaking, you have to listen. I've come out as gold. Reverend Easton was just going to preach, getting ready to preach. Big program. His children coming from Accra. Two girls, two boys. Accident. Two girls died. Died. People came and said, "Oh, today don't preach. Don't preach, don't preach." You know how when people go through problems and they show strength, they say they don't care. If somebody's wife dies or husband dies or children and their faith strengthens them, and they don't cry. See, you get it? So we expect people to break down. And so this man went in and preached. It's not like it didn't pain him. When Bishop Black's son died, you could see the first Sunday he was preaching. You could see from his eyes. You could see that the man was in pain. But you see, he has come forth as gold. Today I was just watching his crusades in Congo. The crowd in the stadium is the biggest African preacher. No preacher is filling stadium. Not like one event and then he goes to do it. This is a man who is holding, like, now that he's gone to Congo like this, he may do Congo and move to Ethiopia and move to, within a month he can do like, and every crusade he does is filled and packed to capacity. But this is the man whose son, a medical doctor at the prime age of 20 something, died. And we have people who don't go to church, whose children are drug addicts and Corinthians club. And they are still walking around at 35 and doing, amen. And they are around. They have no proper place to sleep. They have nothing to do. And they are around. But God said, I will take you to the furnace of suffering. So once you are suffering and you are going through suffering and you begin to question the sovereignty of God, the faithfulness of God, the goodness of God, what it means that you have not come forth as gold. It means all this while your Christian life was not a strong one. But the Bible says that if you falter in times of trouble, then where is your strength? Then where is your strength? Then where is your strength? There are some sisters here, their prayer life is gone because since 5 years that they started fasting, that they will marry. No man has even proposed to them. Their prayer life is gone. They won't pray again. There are some brothers here. They prayed for some job. And they have been believing God for it and nothing is happening. So they have become discouraged. When they get up at dawn to pray, you go and find them sitting like this. Then they are thinking. So me, I've been a Christian all my life. All these unbelievers have jobs. All these unbelievers are going and coming. And look at me. And then he's trying to tell God, if Pastor Kevin starts talking like, so all these people are not pastor's sons. Look at how they are. He's trying to tell me that he's disappointed that he became my son. That he should have been born by some banker or by somebody somewhere, and being a pastor's son is not an easy thing. There's too much restrictions. I have to go to church thrice a week, and all the time my father has one prayer like this 11:38 that night. He said we should do unpack. We're doing it in our rooms on Zoom. When I put the Zoom on, I even sleep. Nobody will see me. Now I have to be on the park. Oh, what a difficult life. What a difficult life. What a difficult father. What a difficult situation. If he start talking like that and I hear, I'll be very disappointed. I'll be very angry. I will give him the option of trying another father. Oh, yeah. Try another father. You, I give you the option. Try another father. Pastor who? Akunedi is there. If you like, try Akunedi as a father. So that's what sometimes God does. But do you know that it wasn't Job that offered himself to the devil to be tempted and to be brutalized like that? In fact, when the devil went to God, the devil didn't take Job's matter. It was God who was boasting about Job. It was God who was boasting about Job. It was God who was just boasting about Job. And sometimes God will boast about you with your marriage. He will boast about you with the works of your hands. He will boast about you. And then something happens and then now... And then Satan goes to God and says, I told you, this guy has never been faithful. He's a fair weather Christian. You know fair weather Christian? Yeah. Like the fair weather Christians, if there's tender on Saturday evening, like it's not raining, but it's just cloudy and they boom, boom. You just decide, I'm not ironing my clothes this evening. Tomorrow I won't go to church. And then the Sunday, you won't come there. If you call him, why didn't you come? Oh, Saturday evening, it was threatening to rain. But it did not rain on Sunday morning. But it was threatening to rain. What about if I come and it has rained? So these are people we call the fair weather Christians. When everything is fine, you find them rolling and dancing and shouting and screaming. Immediately things turn upside down. Their attitude to God is changed. That can be the story of a good Christian. Am I speaking to you? Do you like what I'm teaching? Yeah, you have to like it. I'm your pastor. When Kevin was a baby, story, Pastor Kevin, I'm explaining why he's big like that. When he was a baby, he didn't like to eat. I used to catch him. When we're babies, if you don't want to eat, who cares? All of you have done some before. We used to catch him like this. Isn't it? Then you pour the food. Then you hold his nose. Then you open his mouth. And then you pour the food inside. And they say, hey, swallow. Then They'll be crying. That's what I'm doing to you right now. I'm forcing the word into you. I'm forcing the word into you. You have to grow. Okay? You have to grow. You have to be a good Christian. You have to be a powerful Christian. You have to be a solid Christian. You have to be able to stand for the Lord. Heaven must be proud of you. Heaven must be proud of you. Seriously proud of you. It's nice. I love the song Pastor Kevin has been singing. My father, it's fine. No, the other one. I want to make you proud. I want to bless your heart. And we say, we won't go to smile, isn't it? I want to wipe your tears. If you are looking for a man who will fast and pray. But you haven't fasted for like 6 months. It's not the words that you like. It's not the lyrics. It is the music, the arrangement of the words. See, when we are singing, power, you know, the people will be sitting there looking at him. Where the message is, no? They will get to, aye, 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 aye. What is the meaning of aye? I'm not saying that we can't sing it. We can sing it. But what is the meaning of aye? But because it sounds nice to your ears, you suddenly get involved. Aye, 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 aye. And then you are even going ahead of Pastor Kevin. What a church. What a church. Now, you guys, you know I love you. I love you very much. This church is my heart, oh. You pastoring you, I mean, it's the greatest gift God has ever given me. Okay? Yeah. Now, okay, so let me go to the next slide. Please take me to the next slide. Let me show you something. Let me show you something. Navigating hardship, a biblical blueprint for resilience and faith. How do you navigate hardship when you are going through hardship? It's the way you view it. So number one, endure hardship as discipline. If you want to navigate hardship, see it as discipline. That God is disciplining you for something. Okay? That you are going through is that God can build some disciplines in you. See, the purpose of discipline is to build disciplines in you. One time I was walking on the Accra Business School compound and I saw my son, Nanaidu, was kneeling down. His hands were raised. He said, Nana, who asked you to kneel down? Says his big brother, Pastor City of Fear. I said, good. They are misbehaving, eh? But even if it wasn't Pastor City of Fear, I won't mind. There are parents here, if you discipline their children in school, they will come and fight you. The school belongs to us. But my son was kneeling down at TCIS. No teacher is afraid to discipline my child. Because they know that I won't come. So you go, Nana is laying down, her hands were, he's raised. They do that to him a lot. But this term, no kneeling down. Eh? Try very hard. Not for them to ask you to kneel down. See? So you see him, he kneel down, his hands are up. But you see, I trusted that for the brother to ask him to kneel down and raise his hands, he's building a certain discipline. Okay, he's disciplining him so that he can have a certain level of discipline. Okay, so look at this. Hebrews 12:7, NIV. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? Do you understand? So sometimes God will just look at you and say, you are misbehaving a little. Let me bring you on the path. I love you so much. I won't let you go. I'll take this away from you. 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 Now, I want you to feel the pain. I've pampered you too much. I think I've pampered you too much. So you are not even praying. You are not fasting. Well, I've given you too much. And so the things I've given you is taking you away from me. So now I'm taking it. God is saying, when you didn't have a car, you were coming to church earlier than now that you have a car. Oh, okay. Let me take the car from you so that you can start coming. And then God does something. Your finances go bad. And then you sell the car, hoping that after you have sold the car, you can use the car's money to do some business. And then the money will come back. And then immediately you sold the car, your landlord says, leave the house. Oh, landlord! Hey! And then something happens. And then your child is sick. And then this is sick. And then you have sold the car, and then the money is gone. And then you see, at this stage, you think Satan has attacked you. I don't know what I used the money for. I don't know what I use the money for. I have all this money. I don't know what I use it for. Satan, you are touching my money. I will regret 7 days fasting. And God said, see, I've gotten you. When was the last time you fasted? Even though your prayer topic is wrong, I have gotten you to fast. And then you are there, and then you see, then it is occurring to you. Or is it because it's occurring to you? Let me start going for choirs as regularly and see if God will have mercy on me. You understand? Now you begin to do things to try to attract the attention of God. Now, at this stage, you are now beginning to realize that God is disciplining you for misbehavior. So you are toeing the line. But if you allow the devil to invade your thinking, for the devil to say silently, you think that you have served God all this while and there is nothing. Even only car that you bought is gone away from you. And then now you become demoralized and you become this thing. And now you won't pray, you won't do anything, you won't do anything. That's where the devil says, I have gotten you. I have gotten you. There was a preacher, very good singer. Very, very good singer. Was singing everywhere. Then suddenly, he lost his voice. He couldn't talk. He had to do surgery. Took him 2 years to recover. And you know, when he came out, his first testimony was that God told him he had lost focus. Because he had become popular. He was everywhere. So God took his vocal cavity. God took his vocal cavity. I need you. You are a Christian first before you were a singer. Now you are singing without praying. The money is coming. You are charging people here. They are flying you by private jet. And then you charge here. You charge here. Within that 2 years, he has spent all that money in trying to get well. A finance of suffering. That 2 years, he couldn't go anywhere to sing. And was staying at home and all those things, his attention started going back to God. Started going back to God. Started going back to God. So you see where I'm going to. I'm trying to tell you that God is about to take some things from your life. Anything that has become your God, he will take it away. Anything that has become your God, he's just going to take it away. When we were young, I remember this vividly. There used to be a guy, very handsome guy. The most beautiful part of his body was his nose. Had a very nice nose. And the girls liked the nose. So he had a lot of girlfriends. Oh, the girls like, girls, what girls can like, eh? A girl can like just your ears and one up there. And one up there. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's why women are special. They can ignore so many things about us and just like something small about us. And they are okay. Okay? Good women. That's how they are. That's how they come. I'll teach you all those things. Eh? Okay. That's how good women are. That's how good women. That's how they are. Finished. But the reason why mommy fell in love with me, I'm a preacher. No. She likes the preacher in me. She fell in love with her. If I stop preaching now, she will divorce me. Yeah. That's why every time I preach very well. Because the sustainability of my marriage is me preaching well. Once I backslide as a preacher, that's the end of my marriage. But she said she prayed to God that she wanted a pastor. a pastor who knows God's word, a pastor who can teach God's word, a pastor who can do this, a pastor who can, oh yeah. Anytime I preach, the sermon is good. Once we get home, mommy will bring hot water, massage my feet. Hey, bring hey, your daddy bring a painkiller. Bring this. Hey, then you give me all manner of treatment before we go inside for the inner court treatment. You know? So I have to preach very well all the time to make sure the marriage is sustained. What a church. Where was I? When I talk about my wife, I forget everything. Okay, so endure hardship as discipline. Let's go to the next one. Now, keep your head in all situations. Don't go mad. Yeah, don't go mad. Keep your head in all situations. 2 Timothy 4, verse 5. But you, keep your head in all situations. Endure hardship. You see the same word again. Do the work of an evangelist. Discharge all your duties of your ministry. Can you imagine? Look at Paul talking to Timothy. Now, pastors, I see young pastors with small problems. They say, I won't preach again. They haven't paid me. This month, they haven't paid me. I'm not visiting anybody. Yeah. I used to have a pastor here like that. He did something. I was punishing him. So I held his salary. He was telling people, if he doesn't pay me, I also not go and visit. I won't visit. I'm the one who have been doing visitation. I'll not go and visit. Look at what Paul is telling his son. Look at how Paul is telling his son. Look, I want to go there and show you. But you, my son Timothy, keep your head in all situations. He didn't say, I'm going to bind the problem to go. He said, endure hardship. And then after he had told him to endure hardship, it means the guy was in some hardship. And he's telling him that you can't go mad. You can't change your mind about your calling, about your ministry. You cannot change anything. Keep your head in all the situations. And then he said, endure hardship. Is that how the father should tell the son? Endure it. Endure it. And then he moves on for there. He begins to tell him, do the work of an evangelist. Discharge all the duties of your ministry. He didn't say, go and leave. Continue to work. Endure the hardship. Keep your head on your neck. Continue to work. Discharge the duties of your ministry. This. You cannot be in the choir and say that somebody has offended me, so I won't come again. And I don't have money. And every day I have to go to choir rehearsals. And I don't even have money. And nobody's even asking me how I get money to come to choir rehearsals. Who should ask you? Did anybody call you? You want me to come and ask you, how do you get money to come for choir rehearsals? Am I your savior? Did I die for you? I am only laying the foundation for everybody to build on. Don't let any pastor project himself as a superhuman to you and is some small God be. No. 11:38. Oh, what a church. Okay, what is this time? You guys should let me. So I close at 8:30. It's 5 minutes. So let me quickly look at all this. So are you going to keep your head in all situations and endure all hardship? Yeah. Yes. Okay, and all these things, me and my wife here, we have done it. Remember when we used to go out for evangelism and we were just telling Pastor Kevin how his pregnancy was very difficult. Then mommy and I, we didn't know anything about pregnancy. We didn't know anything about, listen, we'll be going for evangelism. And then mommy would go there, and she start bleeding. She was bleeding. Then we go home. Then she would change. Then we start again. We were threatening abortion. We didn't know. We can go without eating. Somebody's daughter following me. The first time my father-in-law came to visit us, we didn't want anybody to know where we were living in Teshin. He heard we were in Teshin. He came with our wedding invitation card. Picture, eh? Do you know this person? Do you know these people? He walked the whole of Teshin. So somebody said, you see that uncompleted building there? They are there. The man came. I had to go to my neighbors to go and look for kitchen stool to put it down for him to sit down. And me and mommy sat on the floor. We had no chairs. We you can see that, oh, he was very disappointed. Hey, my daughter, this is what you found in Accra. But we have kept our head in all situations. We have kept our head in all situations. We have. Okay. Three. Do not allow hardship to separate you from God. Okay. Romans 8:35. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble or hardship or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? I was watching a video of a very old video of a preacher preaching, was saying how in some village somewhere, a young boy was asked to deny Christ. The boy said he will not deny. They had been butchering the guy. And he had the machete. He said, deny Christ? No. Pow, pow, pow. They'll cut him. They'll cut some part of his body. And then leave him to bleed. And they'll say, will you or you will not? Say no. Will you or you will not? No. Pow, pow, pow. Then he died. Died. Your boyfriend can even separate you from Christ. Your girlfriend can separate you from Christ. Somebody will come to a church like this, hear the things I'm preaching. I don't like that your church. I don't like it. I know boys who have discouraged their girlfriends from coming to church here. But if the two of them stay here, they can't continue to sin. So let us not stay here. Let me hear it alone. So you'll be there. Me, I've made up my mind. I will obey. So let me stay here and you stay there. Because where you are, they won't tell you what this man is saying. Nonsense, boy. Okay, number five. Now, focus on the end results when you are going through crisis. Focus on the end results. 1 Peter 1:6-7. In all this, you greatly rejoice. Though now for a little while, you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that the proving genuineness of your faith of greater wealth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. If you see, all the trials you are going through is to prove the genuineness of your faith. And when you go through like gold in fire, the end result is praise, honor, and glory at the appearance of Christ. Oh, kabababaya. I love the Bible. I so much love the Bible. I'm so much in love with the Bible. Am I not? So much in love with the Bible. Why? Okay, no, number five. Call on the Lord. Call on the Lord. Zechariah 13:9. This third I will put into the fire. I'll refine them like silver and test them like gold. See, when they refine them like silver and test them like gold, if we're silver or gold, see what you will do. They will call on my name and I will answer them. I will say, they are my people. And they will say, the Lord is our God. So God was punishing these people and said, okay, I will kill 2/3 and I will leave 1/3. But even the 1/3, I will take them through fire. And then when they go through the fire, now they will call on me. If your troubles does not make you a prayer warrior, what can you make you a prayer warrior? See, anyone of you in trouble, let him pray. If your trouble does not wake you up in the middle of the night to pray, then what can make you pray? So I meet people outside this country and say, Africa, you are praying, and yet you don't see anything. I say, yeah, because we have not seen anything. That's why we are still praying. If we see what you have seen here, we'll stop praying. I said, government is building social housing for you. You can go and stay there. Government will pay part. It's pay part. We, the one, we, even the kiosk that we are building to stay in, government is charging us and asking us, move. You'll be there, so they come and write, remove. Then they'll come and write on your kiosk, last warning. If the only thing you have is a kiosk with your two children, everything inside, and the government comes to write remove, and they give you a date, and they don't remove, and then they come again with red paint, and they write last warning, and they are not giving you any alternative, what will you do? You pray. So I don't understand why we are praying, and they feel because we are lazy. It is not. You have to call. When you are in fire, you call on the Lord your God. This continent, we are not even praying enough. We are not praying enough. A friend of mine just got ill in the UK, and they realized he had malaria. So they called me. When I finally, so we didn't know which hospital they are taking him to. He left Ghana and went. So in the night, the wife called me. Midnight, I was making calls, calling some of the nurses I know in the UK to make calls. So finally, somebody saw the hospital. They have taken him. He was in Edinburgh. And they called. Do you know what they told me? That he was in infectious disease center. You know, in Ghana, when they say you are infectious disease center, it's a serious thing. I said, so what exactly is wrong with him? Malaria. I said, it's because of malaria they have put him in the infectious disease center. They said, yes, because of malaria. I said, come and see us here. We are walking around with it. We are fine. Everybody has an amount of malaria inside. And we are walking around. It will not kill us. We are killing the mosquitoes. I say in Africa, when the mosquitoes bite us, they get malaria. What a church. So learn to call upon the Lord. Learn to call upon the Lord. Thank you for joining me tonight. Why don't you just lift up your voice in prayer and call upon him now? Tell him to strengthen you. If you are in the fire, call upon him now. Lift up your voice and pray.